When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and we have a wonderful guest today who I just met a little more than 2 weeks ago when I was able to present him with an award at the Coronado Island Film Festival. But you may know him better because he's an Academy Award nominee. That means Oscar to you young folk. It's Paul Raci. Paul Raci, who made such a big impression in the movie The Sound of Metal. And Paul, thank you for being here with us.
It's my honor, believe me. I've got your book on my coffee table.
Oh, God bless you.
Because my wife and I are very big AMC fans. We watch that more than anything because the news is so horrible these days.
Please.
And I'm just a fan of the old movies, Jimmy Stewart, James Cagney, John Garfield. And every time they're on it, I get your book and it's all torn up now because we're constantly looking through it. So thank you for that.
Do you have the classic movie guide?
It's the, it's not the classic one. It's the augmented one later on.
We'll get you one.
That's what I'm saying. So there's at some point we had to split them a little because there's just no more room. We do have a book that is old films, 1960 and before. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So that will have to be delivered to your home.
Awesome.
I love that. I will tell
it's
you.
A must have.
Excellent doorstops. Very heavy. Excellent.
Very heavy.
Yes. I will tell you. So my mother, who has become a better texter as the years have gone on, was texting me from the event that you guys were at Coronado. And she goes, Paul Raci is great. You should interview Paul Raci. He's telling really fascinating stories. And the first thing I wrote back was, I'm so proud of how good your texting skills have gotten. Also, put your phone down. But she was really taken with you and everything that you were talking about. And obviously with Sound of Metal making the splash that it did, but also with the film Coda happening.
Yeah.
It's not your exact life story, obviously, but this is a term now that people are more familiar with.
It's pretty close to my life story. It's the movie Alcoda is kind of outdated today. They used a lot of things. Like for example, honestly, when I was a kid, I did go into the doctor's office with my mother and my father and had to interpret some very intimate details about what was going on with them to the doctor and back and forth. So, but that would never happen today because there are professional sign language interpreters that do that in doctor's offices. But it did give a flavor of what my life was all about, especially the music part of it, because I was such a fan of Elvis and the Beatles and all that music in that era. And I couldn't my frustration was I couldn't convey or felt I couldn't the joy that I got from that to my parents who were deaf.
Yeah.
So I always had a struggle with that. And then years later, as I kept on playing music, the whole show that I do now with the band I had previous to the one I'm starting now, I had a Black Sabbath band, sang the whole set with a headphone on and signed it. So we would have deaf people glutting these hearing clubs. And it was just a fantastic mixture of deaf people and hearing people enjoying the show. And the questions you get from people are so weird because they really can't believe that deaf people enjoy music.
Yeah.
But they do. They love it. It's cultural. You know, they want to be part of what we're doing. And so it kind of bridges that gap a little bit.
So that was that the original band called Hands of Doom?
That was a band I had here in Southern California, Hands of Doom. Yeah. There's Leonard, there are about 11 Black Sabbath tribute bands in Southern California.
It's insane. Sure. At any given moment, at least 11.
Always. So Hand of Doom is one of their songs. And you always pick one song to show so everybody knows. Oh, they're a Sabbath band. So we took Hands of Doom and I just did the whole thing in sign language. We had such a great time doing it.
It's so cool. And something that's happening now that I find so fascinating, again, because I have a small human, they're teaching kids sign language because it has occurred to them that this is a way they can speak before they can speak.
Absolutely. We did that with my kid.
But I mean, it is, not only is it fantastic because I think that ASL is beautiful, and I think I wish that I was fluent in it, because what little I've learned over the years, I just love watching it. I think it's really beautiful to watch. But also, you're suddenly giving a voice to a small human who doesn't have one.
Right.
And they can tell you what they want, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's milk.
More again.
More.
And it's nuts because I go out and I see all these little kids using these different signs, slide, swing, you know, juice, apple. And and then because of that, parents are learning. And again, it's such a wonderful feeling because I don't even think they really understand that we're learning a language. You know.
Well, that's my first, it's my native tongue. It's what right away I was signing with my parents. And then later on, it was a little awkward as I started learning English. I was a little confused at the beginning, but I'm just grateful. I'm blessed to have had that language in my life.
Where did you grow up?
Chicago, Illinois.
And you remained there because you became part of the very active Chicago theater scene.
Yes, I had a theater company there, the Immediate Theater Company. When I got back from Vietnam, I was a little disillusioned. I was lost a little bit, I guess, as I look back. I was married to my first wife. I was married to Isabel for 16 years there. And I had a theater company. And we did Children of a Lesser God in the theater company. I played the lead. And Marley Matlin played the secondary role in our production. And from there, she was discovered. Of course, Bill Hurt already had the role. I wasn't getting any respect as an actor ever until Sound of Metal. But she got picked out to go to New York and audition, and the rest is history there. So
now you didn't get any respect, but you got occasional work.
Yes.
And by occasional.
I mean, well, we're going to talk about your most recent credits, but you go back, your credits go back to ER, Parks and Recreation, Scrubs.
Yes.
Wait for it, folks. Baywatch.
Hey.
And LA Law.
Yes. You know. Yes. I've been working periodically ever since I moved out to California. I got Baywatch when I moved out to California. Mm-hmm. That was a real big deal. I thought that was going to be my big break. That kind of thing. But so I was a sign language interpreter in the court system in Chicago. Then it came out here because to be an actor, you've got to have a side job. You've got to have something that's going to keep you going, paying the rent. So luckily, I got certified as a sign language interpreter in Southern California. And as I think I told you at the festival, that's how I bought my house. I had a daughter who's now 26 and a musician in her own right right now. But all that time I was doing 99 Seat Theater at Deaf West Theater and other theaters here, always keeping my chops up, always hoping to maybe get in the room, get my big break. And honestly, and I don't say this with any regret because I'm a happy man, it never happened. I never really got what I thought I deserved. But when Sound of Metal came along, I was so ready. I was so, I knew exactly what I had to do because I had lived this man's life for all those years as a sign language interpreter.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's almost uncanny because the character you play in that film runs a sober house for veterans. You were a veteran.
Yes.
And you had your own issues to deal with.
Yes.
And of course you spoke ASL fluently. So when Riz Ahmed's character comes to you, you were his safe harbor.
Yes.
So you knew that character inside and out. Yeah.
Inside and out. I'd been through many rehab situations as an interpreter with deaf addicts. I myself had an addiction problem. So I ran a deaf ministry at a church here in LA. So I knew that inside and out. I knew everything about the character. And so taking that with what I knew of acting, it just seemed so natural. We only did two or three takes for each scene in that movie because it was a low budget film. Right. We had to get going. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Wait a minute. You know, so it was in that way, you had to be economical. We knew what had to happen. And that whole experience was an absolute blessing for me to be involved in.
Well, and it got you an Oscar nomination, which of course is kind of the eyes on the prize.
It's a lovely thing to have happen.
It's so beautiful, believe me.
And in terms of impact on your career, I've been doing my homework and I see that from that moment forward, your billing jumped, catapulted.
Yes.
So that in The Mother with Jennifer Lopez and Butcher's Crossing with Nicolas Cage, you're like third or fourth billed.
How cool is that? That is not lost on me. It's a miracle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, look, you know, anybody who works in this industry, in any capacity for a long time, I would at least hope, and I know you do, you feel lucky because there are so many people that want to do it. There are so many people that are trying of all ages, of all shapes, of all sizes, doing all kinds of different things. So if this can be the thing that you get to do as your job, it's incredibly fortunate. I have to say, the idea of you working on Goliath with Billy Bob, I have a feeling you and Billy Bob are like brothers once removed. I can only imagine that the two of you in the same room, the bonding would be.
Well, that is so funny because I only had one scene with him.
Yeah.
And my face is all green because I forget what happened, but we did bond. We had a lovely conversation while they were changing the scenes, the setting there, because he's also a musician.
Exactly.
At the band. We talked for an hour. So we had a great time. That was, I forgot all about that, but we had a great bonding. Then he was gone. So, you know.
No, but he's such a, he fascinates me.
Me too.
So talented. He loves my dad. Who was adorable. But watching in my own mind going, Billy Bob and my dad, huh? Maybe an odd couple, maybe perhaps an odd couple, but it's like he's such a passionate, genuine person.
Yeah.
That if he thinks that you're worth speaking to, and obviously that's how he felt with you, he's just fascinating. He's a fascinating guy.
Absolutely.
You know?
Where did you shoot Butcher's Crossing?
We shot it in Cut Bank, Montana.
Okay.
Listen. To get to Cut Bank, you got to take a plane from here to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City to Rolling Springs or something, 5.5 hours to Cut Bank, which is where the Blackfeet tribe, the Blackfeet tribe nation is. That's where we shot it. And it was such a moving experience to meet those people because they were in charge of all the buffalo handling. And then we had to get, we wanted to show the movie to them before we released it. And I was complaining and bitching all the way. Because they had to do the two planes, hour and a half drive. You can't even get a good steak at Cut Bank. You can't get a good shot of tequila, nothing. It's all the, and I was, but when I saw the reaction to the movie and we just had a discussion about it, I was so moved. And I just felt their pain as much as I can feel it, being the white kid from Chicago that I am. But it was not lost on me. They, they've gone through a lot, and they're still recovering from what has been done to them all those many years ago. So it, I'm so glad and proud to be a part of that. And God, I got to act with Nicolas Cage. Are you kidding me? This guy is an iconic actor. All he talks about, Leonard, all he talks about is cinema. He knows every movie that's ever been made. He knows everything about it. He, and the scene that I have with him is at the very end. I'm in the beginning of the movie and at the end. And I watched a master just go from here to here. And I was riding along with him. So that is a thrill. And I love the movie. It, people think it's a little dark. And why not? It's the history of what has happened is what it is. And I think rather than the romanticized version of all the John Wayne stuff that I grew up with, to see something like this, I want my daughter to be aware of this situation and know a true history of what happened to this country. Mm-hmm.
Now, Paul, I know what you're thinking. Does Jessie have a sequin Nicolas Cage pillow on her bed? She does.
Honest to God.
Does she have an apron covered in Nicolas Cage's face with a matching oven mitt? She does. Yes. Oh. I'm obsessed with Nicolas Cage because I think that he is some sort of miraculous, crazy angel.
And have you ever seen the Stephen Colbert interview with him?
No.
Look it up online. Yeah. Stephen Colbert interviews him and he has 10 questions for him. And the way Nicolas Cage answers the question is beyond brilliant. So you got to look it up. Go on YouTube, look it up.
Oh, we will.
He's wonderful.
I deeply love him. And I love that you guys got to work together. See, he's another one. This is the thing. He's another one. He's worked in this forever. And he just clearly, he wants to work.
It's all he does.
You know, and that's again, that's one of those things. We joke about it when you watch a commercial and you see whoever appear an actor and you go, you got to make your SAG dues. You know, it's like, you want to work.
Yeah.
You want to work.
Yeah. He just wants to work. And he's all about that work. And that's the attitude that when I was in my theater company in Chicago, it was me and 10 other actors and we were all about the work. And it's all I can say about that. There's nothing else you can say, but it's what saved my life of being an actor.
Yeah. Now you also recently worked with Colman Domingo, who's getting a lot of attention right now.
Yes.
For his lead role in Rustin. But you're in a film called Sing Sing with him.
Yes. Sing Sing will come out in January. Okay. And then they're going to bring it back toward the end of the year because they're thinking or hoping that it's going to have Oscar contention. Sing Sing is a wonderful, beautiful movie made by two young filmmakers about the prison Sing Sing. Do you know what it's about?
Yes. Have you not? You know how they do those? It's sort of like Shakespeare behind bars and plays. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a true story about an acting coach who took a program into Sing Sing and he has a bunch of actors and they perform Shakespeare for the prison population. They do 12 Angry Men for the prison population. And so these two young filmmakers, who their previous movie was Jockey, where they took
which I liked a lot.
Very good.
Okay, so what they do in Sing Sing is they have Colman Domingo and myself as the two only name actors in the movie. I play the teacher who brings the program into the prison. Coma Domingo is one of the inmates, and all the rest of the actors, which there's about 9 or 10 of them, are former inmates in the they were actually in the prison in the program, and now they're out. And so there's that mixture again of real life and Coleman and I, and it's amazing. We opened it at TIFF, got a standing ovation. It was thrilling, and you're going to love this movie. And Coleman, again, is amazing in the role that he does.
He is so talented.
He's on fire.
He's
on fire.
Kind. He's so nice. He's so warm. He's so charming. Like,
there you go.
These are the people that you want to see succeed.
Yes.
And there's such a joy in watching them do well. And I think that for people who have become aware of you, it's the same kind of thing. Because when I read about the film, because I have seen all the documentaries about those programs, because I just think they're incredible and so worthwhile, because my God, it's, you know, you're opening people up.
I'd have lunch with one guy. He spent 33 years in Sing Sing. He was a hitman. I said, if you don't mind me asking you how you got in this situation, he said, well, Paul, he was like a soprano guy. The only white guy in the cast, everybody else is black. He did a hit, buried the guy, and his partner told the cops, he goes, you know, Paul, there's no honor in thieves, you know. But here he is. More than one or two of these gentlemen told me, if I had only met an acting teacher when I was a young man, I would not have ended up in Sing Sing. And I was telling this story to somebody else. They said, you know what? I think everybody should take an acting class. Everybody should be able to step in another man's moccasins. And there's something about it. When I studied at Second City in Chicago, when I got out of my, I got my degree as an actor, like that helped me a lot. But I asked my acting professor, who I was in love with, I said, what's next for me? He goes, well, Paul, he says, I don't think you're going to have any success for a very, very long time. And that is not something I wanted to hear. No. But he was so right. But he said, I want you to go to Second City and learn some improv. So I did. I went to a two-year program there at Second City. And oddly enough, most of the guys that were classmates of mine there were lawyers who just wanted to learn how to be facile. So, but the thing in front of a jury, you know, but the thought I had with this person said, I think everybody should maybe take an acting class. It is true. It gives it. What I saw these guys in this program, it was just getting themselves in touch with humanity. Mm-hmm. And they have this aha moment of, oh my God, what have I done with my life? And as I said, had I not met my acting teacher at the University of Chicago, I don't know what would have happened to me. He saved my life.
Yeah,
I found what I was put on this earth to do. And that's why it was so frustrating to be, I was doing great work in theaters, but I wanted fame and money. I wanted to be able to support my family.
Yeah.
It was not meant to be until now, but it wasn't meant to be. I could not stop acting. I couldn't stop digging my teeth in. Oh, here's a role for me. That's what I love to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you learn to express yourself in whatever way it is that happens, if you paint, if you act, and you get an outlet, it's what allows you to be a healthy functioning human, because if you don't let those things out, where do they go? You know?
Right. There's a certain satisfaction that you get from being able to do what you know you're supposed to do, or what you, you know, that the craft. I didn't know acting was a craft. When I was in Vietnam, I was a real rock and roller and still doing all that and all the drugs and everything. But when this guy explained to me, it's an actual craft. I went, oh my God, what am I thinking? You know.
Now, all those years you were doing small roles on episodic TV shows, did you observe the people you were working with? Did you see examples of people you want to emulate, or did you see both good behavior, bad behavior? What did you absorb?
I absorbed a lot of prima donna stuff. For example, I was in a movie with Steven Seagal. I forgot the name of it now, but it's on my resume somewhere. That behavior was appalling to me.
Yeah.
I've seen guys walk on a set and they'll go, oh no. I saw Seagal change the whole thing, and I had to go, it was just, and you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, well, and in those years, a lot of the television shows that I did, I don't look upon them fondly, because I just saw quick, abrupt behavior. And my role was, like I say, a day player. So I didn't see much. Yeah. Most of the theater that I was doing was feeding me as far as the work goes.
Sure. Right.
That was your nourishment.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But I will say, when I did The Mother with Jennifer Lopez, she comes on that set and she's a boss. She's the boss.
Yeah.
She is the ultimate, consummate professional. A pleasure. Because she's, it's what I was used to. Ready to go. I've got my stuff ready. And so there, it's not to say, you know, I've seen the bad behavior for those things as a day player. But when you get to this level, you better be ready. I was told, you better be ready for her. And I was, and she is the boss lead. I'm telling you.
That's so interesting. Tell us about your upcoming movie, The Secret Art of Human Flight.
Secret Art of Human Flight is a small film. It's I look at it, it's kind of an art house movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a film about grief. And we filmed it in about 19 days. There's a young man married to his young wife, and they write children's novels. One day he goes out to do an errand. He comes back. She's dead on the floor from a break-in into the house. And the police kind of suspect him. And he's in so much grief that he ends up on the dark net looking for a way to off himself.
Mm.
And he sees this influencer who's watching a man who looks like he's going to leap off of a cliff. And she takes a photo of him, and he kind of leaps off the cliff and starts flying, and it looks kind of shaky. And it fascinates this guy so much that he tries to get in touch with him. And that guy is me, who's a self-styled guru of sorts who claims he can teach you how to fly.
Hmm.
So the idea is, if you've ever had that feeling about, if I could just fly away and I just want to get away. And the reason I like this character so much is because when I came to LA, I ran into so many of these gurus who told me they had the answer. And one of them in particular, I was so enamored with, because he spoke so streetwise to me. And he was a former drug dealer. And here he is with these long flowing robes and has the answer. And so it spoke to me a lot. And I kind of modeled my character study off of him. But I don't want to tell you how the movie ends, but it's one of those movies that when I read Sound of Metal, I broke into tears reading it at the end. And the only other script that I've read that I cried at the end of is this Secret Art of Human Flight.
Huh.
So wow. It's very interesting. And it is a movie about grief. And my wife calls it grief release or grief relief, because it's kind of funny. And it treats it with that kind of tongue-in-cheek attitude.
Mm-hmm.
There's a phrase that you've brought this up before that people don't really use anymore, but a good cry.
Yeah.
You remember years ago you did that interview, it was I think Mo Rocca or something. Mm-hmm. You talked about how there you need a good cry. And there are some movies you watch and you have a good cry.
Yeah.
And like everything else we're talking about, getting those releases and having those emotions out there, to watch something and cry and you feel that catharsis. It's a beautiful thing. We don't want to watch it every day or we lose our minds, right. But you need those to release?
My daughter. It's hard for her to watch a movie with me because she'd be like, Dad, stop.
Of course.
And I'm crying. When I saw, you know, when I saw To Kill a Mockingbird as a boy in high school. I still can't watch. Gregory Peck, I remember thinking to myself in that theater, I wish my dad was Atticus. Mm-hmm. It was hard to talk to my dad sometimes. He was kind of isolated, and him being deaf, I was trying to understand his world. But I didn't have a guy that like that really that would be like he was the scout. I'm still getting a little
Yeah.
Oh, well, sure. Why not? And you and a lot of other people who had the same reaction.
That movie is so powerful to me. It's a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
When we spoke.
Yeah, go ahead.
When we spoke at Coronado, I mentioned the only other person I was aware of who had your situation growing up, who turned it to his benefit, if not advantage, was Lon Chaney.
Yes.
Who had to interpret for his deaf parents and in the process became a master of pantomime.
Mm. Yeah, he was a master. And my mom and dad would always remind me who Lon Chaney was. And I, believe me, I was very aware of him because the whole deaf community, which is not that huge. It's a huge community when you think about the country, but in Chicago, we all knew who he was. And my mom wanted me to remember that Lon Chaney had deaf parents and blah, blah, you know, guy always ingrained in me, you know, whole thing.
What was it? I realize it could sound silly, but what was it like growing up without those sounds? I mean, especially when you were young, do you remember it being quiet?
It's so loud, you can't believe it. It's just noisy as hell.
Because they don't know that it's noisy as hell.
No, they don't know it, but we sure do.
Yeah.
All the kids in the neighborhood were afraid of my dad because at the time, shock theater was on TV and they were showing Boris Karloff as Frankenstein and Dracula with Bela Lugosi, and which I was fascinated by these movies, these old movies. And my dad had a kind of voice like Frankenstein. And when he'd come out to call me in for dinner, the kids I was playing with make fun of him because that's Frankenstein, you know. So they were loud, you know, just... Sometimes I do all the cooking in our house. So when I'm slamming the kitchen doors and everything, my wife's like, what the hell's going on in there? You know, because we're just noisy. You know, Sound of Metal around the dinner table. You remember that famous scene? They're banging for, you know, that's how it is. So it's pretty noisy. Believe me, deaf people are the loudest. You go into a deaf club, it's noisy as hell in there. With all the different voices and the pounding and the slapping of the hands. So put that notion to sleep right now. They're the noisiest people you'll ever want to meet.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Which came first, the gig on Perry Mason or a Butcher's Crossing?
Perry Mason. I did Perry Mason right after I got back from somewhere. I think from the Mother. After the Mother, then was Perry Mason. Then I was doing the Mother and had to get away to do Butcher's Crossing and then come back. So when I got home from everything, then I did Perry Mason's Crossing because I had to cut my hair. So cut my hair and it's back now, but it was about this long. I donated it to a children's cancer.
Oh,
good for you.
Yeah, it was great. I'm gonna have to do that again.
So the director had worked with you and, is that Gabe Polsky?
Yes, Gabe. Yes, he called me on the phone, wanted me to be involved in the movie. And I said to him, I said, all you've seen of me is Sound of Metal. How do you know I can do this? Because the character in Butcher's Crossing, he's outlandish and crazy and a mean son of a gun and just business money. And he said, no, I know you can act. I know you can. So I was so... gratified that he wouldn't make me read for the part. He just wanted me to be involved in the movie. And I was thrilled. Gabe Polsky's he's just a real mensch of a guy. He really is. I love that guy.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Paul, tell us about working on Perry Mason.
Perry Mason was a huge HBO series. I'd gone from doing a small movie like The Secret Art to being overmanaged in... Netflix was insane, but Perry Mason was an HBO thing. We filmed it a couple of blocks from my house here in Burbank. That was a wonderful experience. Those people, those sets, those costumes.
Yeah.
What all the background actors were thrilled to be there because you get a great meal and you get to dress like the 30s. Oh my God. We were all thrilled to be there. That was a great experience for me. I loved doing that show.
My mom has been obsessed. That's one of those shows that she has stuck with and loves. She is in love with Matthew Rhys, which I understand.
She just loves
that show.
Will you be back?
Well, it was canceled after the second season.
Yeah, it's gone now. So maybe.
Oh, well.
I was hoping because they had my character go to Japan to escape everything. And I thought, well, they got to bring me back. And I would love to have gone back. But... it was not to be.
Every time, right? That's
every time.
Because that's something that you speak to so many people about, that the number of times you work on something and hope that if it's a film, hope that it comes out.
Right. Yeah.
If it's a TV show, hope that it's picked up or is renewed or whatever. You know, it's such a, you have to give pieces of yourself all the time. And then you just have to kind of cross your fingers.
But the one thing about that HBO experience, every single person on that set was happy as punch to be there. That just makes it great.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
It's a huge difference.
It brings everybody up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, every day.
Paul, you are an inspiration. not just because of the things that you've dealt with and overcome, but because of your work ethic. Mm-hmm. The only other person I've met who impressed me the same way was our late friend Robert Forster,
who
got his career got off to a great start and then slowed down to a crawl, and he never became bitter.
Never bitter.
He never stopped believing in himself and his abilities, and eventually Quentin Tarantino, reignited his career.
Right.
And you've had the same kind of experience, and you don't strike me as a bitter man.
No,
I'm not. I can't be bitter. I'm too. I'm just kind of infused with this thing called life,
mm-hmm.
this spirit that drives all of us. And so I've been disappointed. Yes,
sure,
of course, you're human,
but. Every time, and Pacino says, they pull me back in every time I get, anytime somebody dangled a role, I'd be like, I take that role and dive in it because it just infused me with that thing called life again. And I could use it to apply my craft. That's all I wanted to do. So it didn't matter if it was a small role or maybe I was lucky enough to get a big role, at Deaf West Theater working there. Same thing with my deaf friend, Troy Kotzer, who I work with many times at Deaf West. That guy lived in his car for so many years, but anytime he got a role and we worked on American Buffalo together, we were into the role. He was poor and I was disappointed, but we had something to work on together. So he's the same way that I am. We just love to work.
I love seeing him out and about at all the different events because he is just having the best time. And it brings me such joy because this man, who half the time refuses to wear a shirt, is just like, he's laughing and he's smiling and he's thrilled. And again, when you're around those kind of people, it's the same way I feel with Coleman Domingo, because we've met him several times over the years at the beginning of when he was starting to work, as he started to get more established. And now, of course, he's taking off in this beautiful way. It's a thrill. And if this is something you love, and we're very lucky to be in an industry that we love, it brings it just a joy. Joy is the word. It brings you such joy to see people who are having fun and drinking in every moment, because otherwise, why are we doing anything?
Right. I've had so many people contact me that are my age, our age, you know, Leonard, and say, you know what? And I'm telling you, tons of people have said, you know, you've given me hope. I'm not going to give up. I'm an actor.
Yeah.
You know, I've had, and from the Sound of Metal, I've had people write to me and think that I'm a sober AA advisor. And they say, because of you, I haven't had a drink today. Even so, when we were at the Academy Awards, my wife and I, they had some really nice tequila there. I like drinking tequila. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could have a shot. My wife goes, will you have a shot of tequila? I don't want anybody to see me. I don't know what I'm thinking, but people are sending me notes. So, you know, anyway, no, it's a pleasure. I mean, I love what I'm doing anyway, but to be Paul Racy right now, it's really a joy. It really
it's a
is
a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Paul, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
My pleasure.
And for lifting our spirits, truly.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you've done the same to me as well. I mean, it's a pleasure to have met you and talked to you. I was sitting there going, I can't believe I'm talking to Leonard Maltin right here, you know. So I appreciate it very much, really. And it's very nice to meet you, Jesse.
You're a lucky
woman.
Thank you.
Be well.
Yeah.
You as well.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
He really is somebody to admire.
Yeah, it's...
Plus, he's talented.
Yeah, that does help. It does definitely help. No, as I say, that I really mean it. When you meet somebody who loves what they're doing and cares deeply about what they're doing, it just feels so good. And it's such a joyful thing to be a part of.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for him because he's doing what he loves, but also he's at a point where he can really enjoy all of it.
Yeah, and appreciate.
Yeah, and have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
As you and I do.
Yeah, that. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. Paul is such a delight. You can follow us at Jesse Maltin, at Leonard Maltin on Instagram and Twitter. You're also on Facebook. We have our YouTube channel, Maltin on Movies. We live stream there. You can go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups. You have a bunch of new reviews coming up as we're watching all of the movies that are coming out right now. The onslaught, or as we lovingly like, my dad says, this is like his tax season.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah. The end of year for a film critic is like a tax season for an accountant.
Yeah. Suddenly 8 million movies. Let's watch them all.
Yeah.
But we love it. And the last place you can look for us is on Patreon, which I call Maltreon, patreon.com/Maltin on Movies. And you can support what we do. And we're just so appreciative of that.
I just have to add one correction here.
Yes.
We now have to call it X, formerly known as Twitter.
Oh, I refuse. I will never call it X. You cannot make me. If every email that I get sent says X, in parentheses, formerly Twitter, like it's Prince. Is that what we should call it now? The artist formerly known as Twitter?
Something like that.
No, I will not.
Anyway.
I will not.
Check out our Patreon, folks.
And Godspeed. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.